It's the great Dante Read Through.
It's the great Dante Read Through, where we are reading through all of the comic strip, The Adventures of Nicolai Dante. Co-created by Robbie Morrison and Simon Fraser from the weekly science fiction anthology comic, 2000 AD.
I'm Simon Fraser.
And I'm Edie Nugent, freelance writer and Simon's wife. Join us as we swashbuckle our way through the Russian Empire of the future. Warning, there will be spoilers. We will be talking in depth about these comics, so if you haven't read them yet, listen at your own risk. To join our book club and read along with us, go to shop.2000ad.com to pick up the books in hard copy or digital.
Today we're reading The Rudenstein Irregulars, found in progs 1183 to 1190.
Hi, Simon.
Hey, Edie.
So, hello, Irregulars, and welcome back to The Great Dante Read-Through.
Welcome.
Yes. So, we are reading The Rudenstein Irregulars today.
Which is the beginning of the war.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff going on in this one. I'm going to do my best to give some trigger warnings in here.
Yep.
There are enough of them. I'm just going to say in general, there are themes of sexual assaults and suicide in this. If you really aren't feeling great about those things, you might want to skip this one. But I will do my best to warn you when they're coming, so you can skip forward, like, you know, 30 seconds or a minute or however long we're going to talk about these things, because there is quite a lot of story around these issues.
Right.
We've seen sexual assault and rape be a theme in Dante before, with Dante's mom. And so now that we're getting into a war, obviously these things are coming back.
It's ramped up to an extraordinary degree.
It is. And we will get there. It's such a weird... It's so weird after, like, the last episode where it's all like, we're just having fun at a party, you know, like Judge Dredd's there, Roachaws is there, we're all having a drink.
the tonal, I'll admit this, and I don't want this to sound like some kind of score settling exercise, but I was not happy about this. This did not make me feel very happy. The tonal shift to the war was like a neck breaking. And I had a lot of trouble with it. This is Robbie's thing. Robbie wanted to do the war, and he was very, very determined, and he wanted to do something about the horror of war, and it's all very,
You can see the seeds of it being sown in earlier Dante, for sure.
I mean, I knew it was coming.
Yep.
And I started drawing some of it, and I hit a wall. And I was allocated to a different story because I, this why the first part of this is all John Burns. And can I just say that John Burns is absolutely the perfect artist for this. He's so much better than I would have been and so much better than I did, because I've some of the pages he drew here, I did earlier. I tried to draw earlier, and my versions are nothing like as good as his. So respect where it's due. And he's this, the tonal shift here, which the story necessitates, is perfect for Burns' artwork, because he does this kind of stuff very, very well.
Yeah, you can tell.
Very, very gritty, very determined, very angry, death, destruction, the stench of it all. Robbie's prose writing is all out here. It's all very florid and very dark and angry, which is what he wanted. And, the story is perfectly matched by the artwork. Great.
Yeah, I'm just going to read the opening.
Yeah.
because it's a really good kind of summary of where we're at.
Right.
So we're just going to read a little Robbie writing right now.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where we're seeing a voiceover kind of over as we zoom over the battlefield. And there's like a whole score of troops sort of marching in the formation of the double-headed ego of the Romanov crest.
Which is completely stupid. I mean, this is the start of thing. I started reading this stuff and I'm like, this is moronic. Why would you do this? Sorry, I don't mean to say Robbie's a moron, but it's like,
sorry.
I understand the visuals of it are just, yeah,
we do
that's
want Robbie
fun.
To come on this podcast,
I know,
Simon.
I know. He's not going to listen to this. And it's like, this
he's
is
got better things to do.
Ridiculous. This is ridiculous.
Yes.
Why would you do this?
Listen.
This is the kind of thing that happened during the Crimean War, before there was such a thing as air power. As soon as you have air power, marching men in the field like this is absurd.
Oh, I thought you were objecting to them marching in a crest formation.
Well, that's silly. That's even sillier.
But you're just objecting to ground troops.
I'm just objecting to the whole cheerleader formation thing here,
okay.
Which is like some kind of ridiculous show.
Okay.
For cameras. It's
okay.
Nothing to do with war. It's some kind of absurd.
Listen, it's comics,
play.
Baby. Okay.
It's comics. It's some kind of power play. And
well,
the thesis is all about the abuse of power, and that's fine.
Didn't you say? I mean, originally this was going to be a period piece before it became sci-fi. So
yes.
This is obviously a leftover from the
even
period
during
piece bit.
The 18th century, they didn't fight like this.
Okay.
Nobody fought like this. This is
all
silly.
Right.
This is,
all right.
This is silly.
Okay.
It's just silly.
So we know how you feel, Simon.
Yeah, that's how I feel.
We know how you feel.
Anyway.
Okay, so in the year of the Tsar, 2669, so we're in the same year mm-hmm. as when Jenna and Dante, like, you know, screwed the shack to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
How things have changed.
Yeah.
Imperial Russia once again entered a time of war. After years of pursuing their claim to the throne through espionage and political machination, the House of Romanov finally took up arms against Tsar Vladimir the Conqueror. Warfare on such a scale had not been seen since the last revolution. Battlefronts had risen across the entire empire, and the stench of death tainted the breath of every citizen. It was during this time that Nikolai Dante finally accepted his heritage and, after years of defiant rebellion, declared himself a Romanov born, leading his conscripted troops, the Rudenstein Irregulars, to victory after victory. No one's name was mentioned in more dispatches than the heroic Captain Dante's. No one. No one, they said, did more to promote the Romanovs' cause.
Indeed. And this is over.
And no one, they said, spilled more blood.
And this is over a astonishing splash page.
Yes.
Of violence.
A blood splash page.
Blood splash. It's John Byrne's at his very, very best. And if you were going to ask me what John Byrne's page of artwork I would like on my wall, I would probably, this is probably one of the top.
Really?
Top two, yeah. I mean, I have one, which I think is magnificent, and I love it. But this is an astonishing piece of artwork.
It's gorgeous and amazing. I don't know if I want this much blood and death on our wall.
In my studio, maybe.
But yeah, I work in the other half of that studio, man.
I know. It's compositionally, draftsmanship,
yeah, it's
the way it's put together tonally, the color composition is just fantastic.
The detail's incredible, too. I mean, these guys getting blown up here in the background.
Handled. The control of the detail, the way that the eye is focused, the way the mm-hmm. movement goes through it. It's an absolutely bravura piece of artwork. It's fantastic. No question.
Yeah.
It's one of the best pieces of artwork in the whole of Dante, to my mind.
Yeah. It's good stuff.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. Following this huge splashy opening, we are in the Irregulars' sort of makeshift hospital in Tollsburg, where we see a soldier crying over his wounded brother, and a hard-bitten Dante wanders through and starts telling his men to stack the corpses of the enemy against the barricades.
Mm-hmm.
And his hair is cut off.
Yep.
No business Dante will work for this. He's not just pinning it back. He shaved his head.
Yeah.
So he's got the peach fuzz happening.
In fairness, that is my idea.
That was your idea to cut his hair?
That was my contribution. I sent a drawing to John of Dante with a buzz cut.
With a buzz cut?
That was my idea.
Okay. Well, there you go. Here, you want to hold this on?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Why don't you hold it?
That's all I'm taking credit for. Nothing else.
That one thing.
Yeah.
Dante is a big upcycler, so he's going to stack those bodies against the barricades. And deadbeat Daddy Dimitri is now the supreme commander, and I'm sure that's not going to go to his head. He's arrived on the scene to take Dante home just as the Tsar's Romanov forces are apparently preparing a counteroffensive. Mm-hmm. And Dimitri's telling Dante that they're late on reinforcements for mm-hmm. this current siege, and there's no way they can win. And he tells Dante to basically just come away with him and command the troops to fight to the last man.
Right. Yeah.
And that the Imperial Scythe Division, mm-hmm. whatever that is on its way. Mm-hmm. And so Dante, of course, says he's staying with his men, mm-hmm. right? So this is where Dante starts to become even more noble. We were seeing a lot of kind of like his attempts at being noble towards the end of sort of the last story arc.
Mm-hmm.
And when he's like kind of fighting to get Jenna and her sister out of that scrape, and you know, he's being very like, yeah. So this is, he's really taking it.
And but again, as we'll find out, Dante is being rather naive here.
Yeah.
I mean, he's opted to join forces with the Romanovs or be a Romanov, but then he's not. He's like not doing that. And you're like, come on, Dante, get on the horse or just walk. Well, either way.
Yeah,
make a choice.
I have to say I'm very confused by all of this. Mm-hmm. I am very confused as to why in the hell Dante would join forces with the Romanovs at all. It makes so little sense to me
mm-hmm.
that he would do this with these people. He knows who these people are.
Yep.
He knows them really well. We've just watched, like, read books upon books of him getting to know how vile and awful this family is. And now he's just going to fight their ground wars for them? It is very strange to me. Yep. I do not understand it.
Yeah, I know. It doesn't feel earned entirely here.
I mean, I just wish we had a reason. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, I wish there was something narratively here that sort of told me why he was in this position, mm-hmm. you know, or that maybe explained how he got here. You know, did he have to take up arms like because, I don't know, a smaller province was being attacked and he just felt like he wanted to defend the innocent, and then escalated like.
I mean, I'm just guessing here. This isn't in the text, but it's like Dante as a Romanov with a weapons crest is in the war, whether he likes it or not.
Mm-hmm.
He is a weapon, so he can't really avoid it. Even if he tries to run, he would still be considered a prize of war to be seized and exploited in some way by the enemy. So he either opts into the war or he's basically fugitive for the rest of his life. So I don't know if he's got an awful lot of choice, but that isn't stated in text anywhere. So I think that's probably a mistake. Anyway,
I would have liked to see some of him getting strong-armed into being in this war.
Yeah, or trying to run or something.
It seems more would
character
have been,
for him to try and run, because he is the thief and the brigand.
The minute you were like, you know, he can either opt into the war or he's, you know, what did you say?
Fugitive.
I'm like, fugitive? Like, the Dante we know is like, I'm very comfortable being a fugitive.
Yeah.
You would think he would try that for a while.
Yeah, there seems to have been a few months just skipped here, and I think we might need to.
I would love to have seen him trying to avoid this, and then just getting sucked in would have been great. Yeah. That would have been very satisfying.
Yeah. But I think Robbie just wanted to get straight.
He just wanted to get to it. So here we are. We are in it now. Yeah. Dante's going to stay with his men idealistically. And Dimitri's like, I love it. Dimitri's like, drop the working class hero act and questioning Dante's motives. And I'm like, for real though, like I rarely side with Dimitri, but I'm kind of like, dude, have you been paying attention to any of these people?
Yeah.
But, in any event, he questions his motives. Like, are you really fighting for us if you're going to like sacrifice yourself in this way and try and pull this stunt. Mm. And Dante says, don't worry, I want to slit the Tsar's throat as much as you do.
Right.
Okay. I mean, I doubt that, but okay.
It doesn't seem likely. I mean, I don't know.
Who the F knows?
Can I just
point out
that this war machine that Dimitri's flying around in seems to be a convertible?
It does kind of look like a little red Corvette up here, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's got kind of a little top there. It's like so you can feel the wind in his hair.
It's for show. I mean, look at his outfit. He's got this sort of gold brocade, you know.
I mean, I actually like the outfit design. I think that's great. It's obviously Napoleonic.
Oh, I wasn't putting it down. I'm just saying it's very much for show.
It's very decadent. Yeah. It's definitely a man who's not used to getting his hands dirty.
This isn't someone who's going to be in combat here.
Right, yeah.
This is someone who's going to be like signing things in a room.
Right. It's an absurd thing. And the war machine, actually, I don't want to diss John Byrne's war machine here. I think it's a fun piece of design. It looks really cool and purposeful and brutal. And that's fine. I just, that's probably in the script that he's like really at the top there. Yeah. I just want to see some sort of soft top and a rag top war machine.
Well, also, Dimitri doesn't miss a chance to bring up Jenna before he leaves.
Yeah,
and I just have to point you to, we do have a panel of Burns doing Dante's emo Dante, which is great.
See, I would have handled that differently. But yeah. He's entitled to his thing.
I'm just saying Dante's still got his emo, Dante's still in there, which is nice to see. Mm-hmm. And so Dante rallies the troops, telling them he's with them to the end of the line and all that. He'll treat them all to a weekend at the House of Sin when this is all over, which was so funny because it was like almost jarring. I'm like, oh my God, yeah, that Dante, the Dante that like goes and like screws his way through an entire like brothel.
Yeah.
Ugh, it's like, it's very jarring. They cry Diavolo as they go to it, right? Meanwhile,
he shoots the guy in the foot for reasons that are not apparent at all.
No, because he doesn't want him to fight.
Yeah, but you don't shoot someone in the foot. You just tell him to go and look after your brother, you idiot. Like, I order you to go and look after your brother. You don't shoot him in the foot.
That's true. He wasn't really arguing with him that much.
Also, he shot him through the foot with a gun that's supposed to be able to destroy anything that he shoots. So the huntsman really should have just destroyed that kid and Dante be like,
he should have no foot. It should just be like a stump.
There'd be like nothing left of him. Like, oops, that was silly.
Excuse me.
He should have like whacked him with the butt of the rifle or something. It's like shooting him through. This makes no sense. Anyway.
So anyways. Yeah. So then,
take care of your brother.
Take care of your brother with your no foot. That's the guy who was crying over his brother in the beginning. So basically, this is what we're supposed to think, aside from all the very good points you've just made, is that this is Dante being benevolent and saying, like, go home, take care of your sick brother. Don't come to war.
The benevolence of a psychopath.
The benevolence.
Idiot. Anyway, carry on.
Well, we do know who his family is. So, I mean, really, he's got psychopathy in his blood. Mm-hmm. So they cry Diavolo. They go to it. Meanwhile, Arkady and Dimitri drink wine far from the front. Mm-hmm. And they plot. They sit and they plot together. Arkady said something mysterious about bringing plans forward. Mm-hmm. And Dimitri says, let Dante sweat it out, whatever that means.
Mm-hmm. They're sitting there with their gold plates with lobsters on them.
Yes. Oh, there's a lobster, and there, wine. And they've got like a butler.
Yeah.
It's really nice.
It's all very...
Meanwhile, there are people like carrying like wounded over their shoulders in the background.
Yeah. It's all very World War One. Nicely, no, it's Crimea. It's older. It's... 17th century for some reason.
This
is where our conceit of this kind of like retro warfare didn't really work, because this is all predicated on horseback, men working in fields and horseback and cavalry charges and so forth.
I mean, the whole idea that they've said before is that this is like their show of power, is to like use people to fight this war, to show like how many people are behind them, rather than
a thesis here with Dimitri exposes, which is
we haven't gotten there yet.
Again,
we're getting
the wisdom of Dimitri Romanov is not actually wrong per se.
Right. Yes. So we have a new catchphrase, which is, if you're going to die, die hard.
Uh-huh.
With a vengeance.
Yeah, with a vest on.
With a vest on. And the troops... The troops fight it out bloody. Dimitri muses to Arkady that war is hell. Whether it's smart bombs or ground troops, it's all about power and fear, and nothing promotes them both better than obscene numbers of casualties. Mm-hmm. So this is our rationalization for why this is being fought this way.
Okay.
Is just a cold indifference to human life and subjugation.
About power.
About power. We could fight this with robots, but we're not going to.
Right.
You're going to bleed for
it. Which is kind of the thesis of Dante. The whole it's all about power and the abuse of power and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Dante's, and it's nice, the whole like smart bomb thing, because of course this is being written in around 1999, 2000-ish.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, this is stuff that was very much being discussed at the time.
Dropping bombs on chimneys at the time.
Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Dante's men manage to push the scythes to the back foot, and they begin to retreat, actually, and their colonel, Godunov,
Goodenough,
orders his tanks.
Boris Goodenough.
Okay, orders his tanks to start killing their own soldiers because he's mad that they are retreating.
Yes.
Dante whips out his huntsman and brags about how a hot lady with no pants on gave it to him. Actually, he doesn't mention she has no pants on. That was me.
An old friend gave it to me.
Yes, but then he brags.
Oh.
Then the guy asks him and says, "It's a woman, wasn't it?" And he's like, "It's always a woman, baby." Yeah, I added the no pants thing because I will always remember her as the alien lady with no pants.
Sure.
Yeah.
Hey, listen. It's legitimate. She has no pants on.
Doesn't mention she was an alien.
Yeah.
And the huntsman basically becomes like a rocket launcher.
Yeah, I mean, this is it. You've got a whole division of tanks here, which Dante could basically shoot all of them.
Just with the huntsman, yeah.
So none of this is unnecessary. He could just destroy all these tanks.
Yeah.
But he doesn't. He just shoots one of them.
And then Lulu and Constantine show up. And Lulu is looking super cute in her uniform, by the way. A little red fitted military coat. And she unleashes her cyber swarm, and he unleashes his fusion bombs at all the remaining sides.
Right. So that's it. Done.
Done. Over.
So this whole fight could have been basically not happened because...
Well, this part of it, we know. Yeah. This is what he was talking about, obviously, with Arcady before, about not advancing things and letting them sweat it out.
Yeah.
Dante confronts Colonel Godunov amidst the carnage, and the colonel tries to surrender, telling Dante his imperial honor dictates he has to spare him, but Dante gives him a nice honor be damned and just cuts him down.
Yes.
Yes. And Dimitri sees this and is all like, "That's my boy."
Yeah, did a little quiet taste for killing there.
And also, Dimitri's looking a little kingpinish here.
He's getting bigger.
Yeah, he's kind of like big, imposing, bulky.
Great coat.
It's the great...
Great coat.
It's such a great coat.
That's a great coat.
It's really a great coat. You know, they argue as Dante is big mad that Dimitri didn't tell him that his crest superpower siblings were like laying in wait to help. And Dimitri just shrugs it off, like, "Follow my orders next time, maybe. I did tell you to leave, you know.
You're a captain, not a general.
Is, yeah, just get this on is with punishment it, so. For you trying to like lead an offensive that I didn't sanction."
Bingo. So petty.
But like fair. It's weird when you end up agreeing with Dimitri. It's like a very strange feeling.
Yeah, it is. I mean, up to now he's been a cartoonishly bad, one-dimensional bad guy, and now he's actually turning into a two-dimensional bad guy. Which
my
is great.
God, two whole dimensions.
I know. It's fun. I like the way John Burns draws him here. He's
yeah, he looks great.
Thoroughly despicable.
Mm-hmm.
And great, excellent.
And this is obviously Burns before he starts doing the painting stuff. This is
it's coming in there, right?
Yeah,
you can see he's
sort of painterly coloring and some. Yeah. So the fire looks painted.
Yeah, he's using it as a sort of tonal shift to sort of give depth. So sometimes he goes flat color line work, and then sometimes he paints it. So you get this kind of like depth thing created by the disjuncture of styles, which is kind of clever.
It's really beautiful.
It's good stuff.
It really is.
He's very, very good at this.
Lulu tells Dante to smile for the cameras because, of course, the Gorsky communications folks are there.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's Gorsky is how it's spelled.
Gorky is how it's spelled.
That's totally how it's spelled. It's spelled Gorky. You're right. I don't know why I'm arguing with you.
I don't know why you're arguing with me.
Okay. Anyways, she says smile for the camera because the Gorky communications folks are taping footage for propaganda. So there's a lot of discussion of propaganda that will happen as we move forward here.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go to Sebastopol.
Yeah.
They describe as a place where innocence was lost. So this is like the barge coming back from the front to like the nearest town, I guess, where they're all their main base of operations is for this part of the war.
Pile of corpses.
And death barges unloaded and then reloaded with new recruits. And they like didn't even hose it down in between. Mm-hmm. The decks are still covered with blood. Cemeteries became mass graves. And when the cemeteries were full, they burned funeral pyres on the beaches. Very descriptive and awful.
Yeah.
And then we see this dude just leading a line of women in collars on chains through the corner. And when I got to this page, I was like, is that just going to be like a background detail? But like, no, it does play in. There's a whole... I thought there was just going to be some random background detail with like this guy. I was like, what's going on there? But no, it is a plot point.
I found them. They're mine.
I called it. Shotgun.
Sergeant Grozny.
Sergeant Grozny is bringing ladies for the Romanov soldiers to have their way with. So this is the part where I'm going to say, if you are triggered by these kind of things, you're probably going to want to skip forward. I'm going to say 2.5 minutes. We'll probably about, allow us. No. We're gonna dip back in and out. So the next, it's about the next 2 minutes. Yeah. So here we go. Mm-hmm. Okay. Right. Okay. So basically, he's bringing these ladies in for the Romanov soldiers to rape, and he sort of starts talking to this dead body that's basically strapped up to a pillar.
Seems to be his on the superior beach. Officer.
Yes. Well, it says Captain Pavlov, right? He talks to him sort of Weekend at Bernie's style. He's kind of talking to him. And also tied to a nearby pillar is a young woman, also in uniform. I thought it was an enemy uniform for a minute, but it's not. It's her own.
She must have tried to stop it.
And so she got lashed up too.
And here we meet Elena Kurakin.
Yes, we do.
One of our great supporting characters.
She tells Grozny he better kill her while he still can. And he calls her Lena. And this is Elena
is shortened.
We'll say Elena. Then Grozny and his captain start negging the prisoner women to decide who they want to rape first. Mm-hmm. So they're like dressing them down. That one's not nice enough for me to rape. Right. And they pick a blonde woman who spits on him. So he punches her and starts to rape her, like starts to push her down and like attack her. Mm-hmm. But we know that this is Dante's least favorite thing in the world. And soon enough, Dante is blowing his head off. Right? So Dante cuts down Elena. And we learn that she's Elena Kurakin, a private. She fills Dante in on how the Grozny gang has been terrorizing the city and looting it because Captain Pavlov, who the late sergeant was saluting, the dead body strung up there, couldn't keep control of his men.
Right.
And I was very confused as to what the heck was going on here. And then it's sort of explained, like, as we turn the page. Basically, the soldiers are reinforcements sent by Dmitri, who are a bunch of murderers, rapists, and thieves who have been granted release from prison if they enlist.
Yep.
And so Dante and Elena basically storm the governor's mansion where she's telling him that they've basically just been taking women to, like, rape them and, like, lock up, like, people who would try and stop them there. So Elena and Dante basically storm this place Dante informs the Groznys. She says it's this gang, the Groznys. Yeah. I guess this gang that was in the enlistees, or it was a local gang in the town. It's a little unclear.
Basically, criminals. I think they're criminals mentioned that either, earlier. They're actually been mentioned earlier.
I feel like they have been too. Yeah, it's the name is somewhat familiar. So I think they might be local crime dudes that like hooked up with the reinforcement criminals, and they're like just kind of running roughshod over this town while the cat's away.
They've all got uniforms on, or more or less. So,
yeah.
So obviously,
it's all a mess. You know, fair enough. I'm sure this is what happens in big wars. So Dante basically tells the Groznys that he just killed their brother down by the beach. That's the one he shot when he was trying to rape the woman. And a fight ensues, and we get to see Elena slice off a dude's hand while Dante beats some other guys up and burns someone's face. You get it. Like, a lot of kicking and punching. And he gives the rest of the criminal reinforcements a big speech that they better stop with this whole, like, raping spoils of war stuff.
Right.
Or he'll kill them himself. And he's like, look at yourselves. And they're kind of all like, there are these scenes of them like holding these women back and kind of, you know, taking advantage of them. And he's like, look at yourselves. You know, he's kind of trying to lecture them.
Yeah.
So, you know, now we're jumping back in. You can like rejoin us at this point. We have made it past the trigger warning point for now. But from these charming scenes, we cut to Kurt Brockman from Bolshoi News. So these are the others, not Gorsky. This is the other news channel. So Gorsky is the propaganda.
Gorky.
I keep saying it.
You do.
I keep saying it. Gorky.
As in Gorky Park.
I don't know what Gorky Park is.
It's the park in Moscow.
Oh, okay. So Gorky Communications is the propaganda arm of the Romanovs, and Bolshoi News is the propaganda arm of the Makarovs.
Which is named after Maxim Gorky, who is a poet. Famous Russian poet.
Okay.
Sorry.
So Kurt Brockman Bolshoi News reporting live from the front. We get his voiceover telling us about some mighty Conqueror cannons that are firing their first shots in the ongoing war. Mm-hmm. And he's sort of narrating footage of the cannons blowing up a rebel Romanov convoy in the Ural Mountains. And he basically explains that the Tsar's cannons fire plasma bolts all the way on up to nuclear warheads. They're very versatile.
Right. Yes. So basically, this is the guns of Navarone.
Okay.
For some reason, they can't shoot these things from space because
They explain why.
Because they're somehow defended. I don't know.
There's a thing with a thing.
Yeah. Anyway.
You know what I'm saying? So, okay. Dimitri doesn't love these cannons, right?
Yeah, nobody
so
does.
Back at Romanov Mobile Command in Tolsberg, he's chatting strategy with Dante, which is just weird. Mm-hmm. It is so weird to see Dimitri sitting here just being like, so this is what we're going to do. And Dante's like walking around with a bottle of wine, sort of half-heartedly, almost like just so you recognize this is Dante, we're giving him a bottle of wine. Like, yeah. We know it looks weird that he has no hair and that he's talking war strategy with Dimitri. You might not recognize him. So we're going to put a bottle of wine in his hand.
Yeah.
It's a very strange, I had a really weird, what?
There's this sort of electromagnetic pulse weapon. Bear this in mind in a few minutes' time. I'll explain what's wrong with this. Anyway.
Okay, will you?
Yes, I will.
Okay, yes. So the idea is that he wants Dante and Dante's team to infiltrate a castle behind enemy lines and sabotage the cannons that are at this castle with an EMP. Of course, molded in the shape of the double-headed eagle because the Romanovs are just on point with their branding.
Branding is everything.
Most especially in the theater of war. They are on point with their branding.
Damn right.
Yeah. Then the battleship Potemkin will blast the cannons from space, just in case you forgot we were in the future.
The higher ground.
Yes.
Yes.
So apparently this castle that they're going to infiltrate is also an interrogation center run by a Dr. Laszlo. Mm-hmm. Imperial torturer.
Yes.
Also Jackie Daytona.
Okay.
Laszlo.
Oh, like it. Yeah,
What We Do in the Shadows.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Right. If you don't watch What We Do in the Shadows, you should just do yourself a favor and watch What We Do in the Shadows, the TV series. One of the characters is named Laszlo, and the whole time we're talking about Laszlo, I could not take him seriously because I kept thinking about Laszlo.
Jackie Daytona.
Human bartender.
Anyway.
Okay. So Laszlo is holding Ingrid Wagner prisoner.
Yeah, who's still alive. Amazingly.
Who's still alive, and he's intending to use her against the Romanovs for propaganda purposes or something. And because it was Dante who revenge porned her into flipping on Juliana, Jenna's late sister, who was murdered and who kicked off this whole war, her murder.
Right.
Dimitri is telling Dante to dispatch Ingrid permanently.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm sure Dante's going to do that. I'm sure that's exactly what he's going to do. Why does Dimitri even bother to issue these orders? Like, what is the point? So, okay, Dante selects the soldiers for his infiltration team, and we get to know them a little better, right? So we have Boris Grozny, leader of the Grozny gang, imprisoned for every violent crime you can think of. Foma, the coma Grozny, fragment of axe blade lodged in his brain renders him impervious to pain. Okay.
Also common sense.
Spatchcock, what a great name. Yeah. Paranoid, pathological liar, extortionist, poisoner, unrepentant purveyor of filth, most untrustworthy man in the empire. Lord Peter Flintlock, disgraced English aristocrat and renowned dandy. I want to know what he's disgraced for.
This is a reference.
Do we find out?
I don't know. I can't remember. I think he turns up. We do a little bit.
Okay.
That's a reference to Warlord, which is a British boys comic of the 1970s and 80s, early 80s. Sir Peter Flint was the kind of hero of that comic. He was kind of nominally the warlord.
Okay.
He was some kind of like World War II hero type.
Okay.
Aristocrat, whatever. But this is Robbie having a dig at that whole idea.
Got it. Well, and apparently he was in prison for failing to honor a drunken wager with Andreas Romanov. Then there's Ursa Grozny.
Mm-hmm.
No available data.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have Elena Kurikan, who the text calls a half-breed.
Yeah.
I just put in my notes, half-breed with, like, in caps with question marks. We do not call people this.
Yes.
This is not a term we use to describe people.
Yep.
Okay? Just N-O, no.
Yep.
Just no. Mm. Like, we don't know. I don't really know what else to say. I hope that doesn't crop up anywhere else. Yeah, I hope this is the one time we hear this.
I haven't heard it. I can't remember hearing it elsewhere, and it's never mentioned what she is a half of.
It is, actually. Is yes.
She's a Mongol warrior, but otherwise it's not mentioned.
Well, okay, but now we're going to talk about frickin' term half-breed. Okay. If it's half-breed, the other half is white. That's right. Usually what it means, okay. Right?
Sure.
Like,
okay.
Even here in America, it was used for people with indigenous ancestry.
Indeed.
Who were also white. So I'm going to assume that that is what we're talking about here, because it is we only mention her Mongol part.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So anyways, her commanding officer, she killed him because he proved unworthy of her loyalty. I'm sure he did, too. I'm sure he was a piece of shit.
I'm sure.
Anyways, so these are the irregulars.
Yeah.
Welcome.
It's the Dirty Dozen.
Yeah. So as they approach the cannons, here, you want to take the comics?
Sure.
There you go. You take that. As they approach the cannons booming in the distance, the team faces off against an Imperial Guard on a space rocket glider thing.
I like the Crest comment here. Congratulations, Dante. You're possibly the first commander in military history who has to fear his own men more than the enemy. Which I'm sure is not true.
I was going to say that's definitely not true.
But anyway,
to be salty, Crest. We love it. Yeah, we love
salty.
A salty Crest.
We haven't heard from the Crest for a
while. I know. The saltier the Crest is, the happier I am. So really.
Right. Yeah. It's always better.
So, yes. So they're facing off. Imperial Guard sort of swoops in and starts firing at them.
Shoot,
space rocket gliders? I don't know what to call this.
I don't know. Yeah.
Right? I don't know. It's they're like jet skis, but they float and they have guns on them.
Yeah.
And so the team apparently manages to take out 7 of the enemy.
Yeah.
Amazing, again, Elena's doing most of the work.
Yeah. And they're all on foot.
Somehow
Elena manages to take down the jet ski glider things. Well, she's on foot with swords.
With swords, yeah.
It's like, doesn't anyone use guns here? I mean, this whole thing's...
You need to let it go, baby.
Do I?
Yeah, you do. Yeah. I mean, feel free to like pop in and grouse about it, but like, you know, it's been established. Your point of view has been established,
yeah.
I think.
Okay.
We don't want to beat a dead horse.
Oh, can't we? I'm dead enough for
what
me.
Did that horse ever do to you, buddy?
Hamburger.
Okay, so they take out 7 of the enemy. Elena does most of the work, and Flintlock gets trapped on the side of a cliff with no one to help him hear him.
Yeah.
Or hear him. He's just hanging there.
Because
he's comic relief. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, in Laszlo's torture fortress, Lazo is, you guessed it, torturing Ingrid.
Of course.
And he yaks on about making her his torture masterpiece, or like whatever.
Right.
He cuts all of her hair off while she cries, and he shames her for her betrayals because he wants to torture her psychologically.
Okay. Sure.
Getting flashbacks to like exes of mine.
Yeah, really?
I'm kidding, no.
No.
But, like, maybe a little. Just the way he, like, the way he's sort of, like, talking her into feeling bad. I don't know. This whole thing felt very gaslighting to me.
Yeah.
So, you know.
That's a torture, you know.
Yeah. So Flintlock is rescued by the enemy and brought back to Laszlo, who, like, just has time to do everything. He can shave girls' heads, he can psychologically torture them, and then just be chilling with a drink and his feet up on his desk and talking to Flintlock, like, a few moments later. He's really a man about
town. I love that his masterpiece of torture is to threaten to stub a cigarette in a guy's eye. It's
but,
like,
Simon, he's going to do it slowly.
Wow, okay.
That's his
I see.
I guess Flintlock isn't worth anything more.
No.
He doesn't really need to use anything more sophisticated. Right. Or maybe he's tired from using everything up on Ingrid.
Maybe.
Like, he's worn out. You know, she's his masterpiece.
There you go.
This is what he's got left in his bag of tricks. So, yes. So Flintlock spills the beans on Dante's plan to disarm the cannons.
Okay.
Meanwhile, Dante and the team make a friend in a cabin nearby because they recite an Irish blessing at each other. I am so confused by this part. They plan to go through the cannon's cooling shafts to plant the EMP. Just then, bullets rip through the cabin, and Laszlo has found them. He's just everywhere, this guy. He's just like, bam, bam, bam.
Omnipresent, yes.
He's really a hard worker, you know?
And the Dante crew seem to be moving very slowly, whereas Laszlo is everywhere.
He's really... Well, maybe there's more than one Laszlo. It's like the Arbidovs.
Did the Dante team just set up camp and like chill out for a couple of days?
Yeah, something.
Like, Laszlo's got everything going on.
I know. They're just not, they're not on the money enough. Yeah. So bullets rip through this cabin. Laszlo has found them and he's got like two huge floating tanks pointing their cannons right at them. So Dante covers them all with the huntsman and tells the group to retreat behind him. But just then, Boris grabs the huntsman and knocks out Dante, telling him that they want to kill him more than Laszlo does. And maybe they'll just turn him over to the torturer and collect a bounty.
Fair point, frankly. Yeah.
Dante then gives them a big speech about how they can transcend being, you know, the expectations of the asshats that like place them in military service and prove that they're more than just scum. And they lead him out at knife point to Laszlo anyway.
Assuming that matters to these people, why would it matter to them?
You know,
they're quite happy being scum.
I mean,
let's face it.
This is the second time he has like appealed to their humanity by saying like, be more than the people who hold you down, like, yeah, give it to the man.
Sure, Dante.
Is kind of what he's saying.
Okay.
I mean, I guess he's basically trying to inspire them to, like, his journey, because he was just, like, a street rat thief, whoring and thieving, and then
suddenly got given unearned privilege.
That's what he's missing. He needs to give them some unearned privilege, and then maybe they'll rise to the occasion.
Let's hope so.
But anyways, they lead him out at knife point to Laszlo, and Laszlo promises them rewards and whisks Dante back to his torture castle.
Yep.
So Laszlo finds the Romanov-branded EMP and deduces the destroy the cannons plan. Meanwhile, Laszlo's goons take Dante's team off to double-cross and execute them. Could have predicted that, but Boris distracts them by scratching bugs out of his hair and eating them.
Yeah.
Which is disgusting, but I also enjoyed.
Okay.
Because I did not see it coming.
Okay.
Did not.
Sure.
I definitely wouldn't, that was not on my bingo card.
Mm-hmm.
So the team gets the drop on the Imperials through this distraction. And the Irregulars triumph.
Lena's been disguised all this time.
Yes. You know? Yes. And they take him out.
Dante still managed to fight back, having had the shit beaten out of him, apparently.
Yeah. He manages to grab weapons off of Laszlo's guards, kill them, and then unsheaths his bioblades at Laszlo. And I'm kind of like, yeah, why didn't you use your bioblades? I forgot you had those. All this, like, fighting with a real sword. I was like, yeah, what are you doing?
What the hell?
Why is he fighting with a real sword?
It's not clear.
It's strange.
At all.
Anyways. So, he escapes somehow. We don't see it.
Mm-hmm.
And he makes his way out of the castle and walks right into a phalanx of Imperial troops.
Right.
And
then there's a portcullis.
Yeah, that's him escaping the castle. I sort of breezed over that.
What? Presumably decorative?
You know, it's like how cassette tapes came back into fashion. Like,
okay.
You know. So anyway, he walks into this phalanx of troops over here.
Right.
And just then, Boris takes them all out from a vantage point with, like, I guess a rocket launcher. I don't know where he got this from. I guess from the team that were going to execute them. He, like, found this.
Right.
Anyway, Elena gets Dante as huntsman just as the cannons begin firing their plasma beams at Dante, and Dante manages to get in a too-cool-to-kill line, just so we remember it's Dante, and he leaves her in charge as his sergeant while he dashes off to rescue Ingrid. So he makes it to Ingrid, and Laszlo's got her ratcheted up on, like, what do we call this thing?
I don't know, torture table?
A wooden torture table that...
Some kind of... Pinion mounted.
I don't
table.
Know. Anyways,
rack, probably some kind of stretchy
rack.
Thing.
Yeah, wooden rack. Sure, I'll go with that.
Yeah.
And Dante is immediately like, "What have they done to you?" And I'm kind of like, "She's just got a buzz cut and she's crying. Like maybe nothing's happened to her yet. Like what is what have they done to you?"
Well
mean
supported there.
I mean, I don't see anything. Hmm. What does he mean? What have they done to you? It's so weird.
They cut her hair, obviously. Laszlo is upset because he can't find the triggering mechanism for this
for
EMP
the EMP.
Device. So what does he do? He carries the EMP into the castle, which the EMP is designed to destroy.
I was thinking like, this too. Like, why not just leave it in a field?
Why not just break it and leave it in a field?
Just leave it in a field?
Yeah, moron. And it's like, this doesn't make any sense at all.
It really doesn't.
No. Okay.
So anyway, Laszlo monologues about how it's Dante who actually tortured Ingrid by the whole revenge porn, shaming her into being a double agent thing. And I mean, like, fair enough, Laszlo. Fair. Like, that's a fair point. Yeah. And he basically says he'll trade Ingrid for the EMP activator as he holds the EMP up, right?
Right.
Dante.
In the center of the castle.
Right where it needs. Well, here's it. I'm going to ask a question about this in a minute. So Dante reveals the EMP activator is programmed into his weapons crest and that he has a dead man Dante switch and that he can also, so if he kills Dante, it'll go off, but he can also trigger it with his crest. And Laszlo doesn't believe him. So Dante proves it by electrocuting him.
With the EMP.
Shocking behavior.
Wow. Okay.
But like my question is, the EMP shock was enough to reach the cannons too? Like, they're in the basement. They're not anywhere near the cannons.
It's not destroying the cannon. It's supposed to be destroying the security protecting the cannons.
Oh. Right. So again.
The security wall is dropped. Some arbitrary.
But they're in the torture basement.
I don't know.
How is it near the... It's not even near a security station.
Yeah, just throw the EMP.
Is it basically taking out their Wi-Fi? It's like the EMP is like killing their Wi-Fi.
I think so. I think that might be it.
Oh, no. Dude, you could have just like unplugged the router, man. We didn't have to go through all this.
Like,
but anyway.
From a catapult from across the valley. It'd be much easier than what they tried to do here. But I suppose he had to try and rescue Ingrid for reasons.
He did, yes. And like,
he had to make himself feel less
I don't know. And then we see this like EMP like light up the night as well. So I guess this is kind of showing us that the signal is going out farther than just the torture basement.
I mean, you wouldn't see it, but yes.
Yeah, we're seeing this shot from afar. Elena's kind of looking back at the castle and we see the EMP is grown large. Anyway, I don't know. Somehow Dante and Ingrid are fine, even though they're right next to it. It seems weird to me, but anyway. Isn't it a pulse? Shouldn't it kill them too or something?
It's an electromagnetic pulse, so EMP is created in... Now, sense it's created by nuclear weapons and it destroys electronic devices.
So it wouldn't hurt you if you were like 10 feet from it?
It should destroy Dante's weapons crest if it's an electronic device, but it doesn't, obviously.
It doesn't,
There you go.
Okay.
That doesn't suit anything.
Sure.
But yeah, so it knocks out all the electronics in the castle and that stops the defensive grid.
Right. Okay, the grid goes down. The Potemkin then fires from space at Madame Director's command. Nice to see the Romanov matriarch again.
Yep.
And Dante manages to get Ingrid out just in time before the whole place explodes by escaping into the sewers.
Right.
And there's just some like explosions and sewer play here.
Yeah. As you say.
As one says.
Right.
Later at a hotel in Tolsburg by the Romanov front line, Dante and Ingrid are all cleaned up. Mm-hmm. And Dante tells Ingrid he's going to reunite her with her family. The family she ultimately flipped on Juliana to protect. So see, Dante's revenge porn just sort of like cracked open the door to the Romanovs coming in and really threatening her. So it was Dante gives the assist. He gives the in. And then I think it was Andreas and maybe Konstantin, I don't remember, who came in and said, we'll kill your whole family. And that's when she actually flipped on Juliana.
And this is the family that Dante vowed to fight alongside during the war.
I mean, it's puzzling, truly. Yeah. It's truly puzzling, it especially after Juliana gets murdered. Like, I just, I don't... Anyway, okay, so Ingrid asks Dante if he ever really cared for her, and he unconvincingly tells her that he did after a bunch of hemming and hawing. And I'm just like, what in the actual, Dante? Just lie. Just go, yes, yes. Yes, I cared for you. I still care for you. That's why I'm here.
He's telling that
how
his
the
eyes
heck?
Are completely black.
Oh, there. My God. I just, anyways. So Dante's irregulars are relaxing and washing up in the hotel baths, and we find out that Ursa is a woman, and she hits on Dante. There's this nice little scene, and by nice, I mean not nice, where Dante tells Elena to kill Ursa if Elena ever catches her sneaking into Dante's room. So we have another thing where Dante is acting really, really scared of a larger woman. Hitting on him.
Yeah.
And I am not liking that this theme is coming back. It's making me very angry.
Yeah.
And it's shameful.
Yeah.
Just going to say straight up, that's really shameful.
It's not good.
And okay, now we're going to ask you to skip forward probably about 30 seconds if you have issues with around suicide.
Yeah.
So Dante later, I guess, because like, you know, we jump from that weird note of like, to Dante running up the stairs saying, "Hey, Ingrid, I found your sister and in a slave camp or something, and we're going to reunite you. She's on her way right now." And we find that Ingrid has died by suicide. She is hanging from in the room. I'm not going to describe that more because that can be very triggery, just in case. Yeah. Not a good idea. But it's a very striking image, obviously. Yeah. It's really ghoulish. It's really awful. What a hell of a note for us to end on. Mm-hmm. I know you're done with your whiskey. Do you need a nip of mine, honey? I still have some left for you. Goodness gracious. I just... See, this is where I jumped off the Dante train the first time I read this series through.
Yeah,
was
understandable.
I read through to this much. I at least read this much. I may have even read past it, but I think I did because I remember some more irregular stuff, like vaguely. But, oof.
Yeah.
Brutal. It's really brutal. I mean, oof. I just, I'm kind of at a loss for words. I'm kind of at a loss for words.
That's more shocking than anything else that's happened.
It's, I mean, it's just going to be more of this, huh? As we go on, is it going to...
I mean...
Was that kind of the brutal first punch and now we're going to get some more intrigue, maybe?
There's a bit more intrigue happening from then on. They're definitely was looking to shock with the first part,
I think. Well done.
Yeah. I think there's more... horribleness coming.
I mean, obviously, it's still a war at the end of the day.
My part of it was more about the kind of like derring do and the intrigue, which I was much happier with.
Yeah, sure. Much more your wheelhouse. Yeah,
Burns definitely handled the grim and gritty stuff.
He sells it.
Yeah.
I mean, it is beautifully done, all of it. It's really amazing work. Okay. So. I'm just going to go into the bumper because I don't know what else to do. We are closing the book on Dante for today. Everybody, treat yourself well after this one if you're reading along. Like, wrap yourself in a blanket, have some Doritos, drink some water, have a shower. Whatever you do that's comforting, treat yourself. This is a real grueling, grueling thing we're all embarking on together. But we are here with you.
Yep.
And we are closing the book on Dante for today, but we will be back next week with Love and War.
That's got to be better, right?
There's at least love in part of it. I'm crossing my fingers it's an even balance, but we'll see. We hope you enjoyed our podcast. And if so, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Leave us ratings and reviews wherever you can. And tell your friends. Word of mouth is a good way to get people to join onto the read through. Mm-hmm. Follow us on Twitter at PodTGDR. For the great Dante read through. Let us know what you think of the podcast of Dante Comics, whatever is on your mind. I'm Edie.
And I'm Simon.
And we will catch you next time.
Bye.